Let's learn about Wharton Lauder and its joint MA-MBA and MA-JD programs for people who are passionate about international business. Hello and welcome to the first Admissions Straight Talk of 2016. This is the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that wonderful moment when you high-five the person next to you shouting, "Yes, I'm in." And first, a quick reminder, if you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at accepted.com/135. If you're expecting me to say info, I'm not doing it deliberately. We're now just at accepted.com/135. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. And FYI, if you want to just ask your question in a comment on the blog, feel free to do that too. We're developing a wonderful and thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to leave a comment, share a thought or concern or whatever. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Dr. Marcy Bevan and Kara Keenan-Sweeney, Directors of Admission at the Lauder Institute at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton and Penn Law School. Marcy and Kara, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks.
I'm really pleased to have both of you here with me today. Marcy, can you give an overview of the Wharton Lauder program? There may be some listeners who aren't that familiar with the program, and I do realize that there's both an MA-JD and an MA-MBA.
The program is 30 years old. The Lauder Institute is a joint degree program where a student will get an MBA from the Wharton School and an MA in International Studies from the School of Arts and Sciences at the University of Pennsylvania. There are a few students each year who join the Lauder Institute after their first year at the Penn Law School. It's a 24-month program, which is unique in the world of joint degree programs. And the students begin in May of each year, and they spend 1 month on campus. Then they go for 2 months for an immersion in a region with a specialization in a language that corresponds to one of the countries in the region. And Kara can talk a little bit about what's new in the program in terms of the regions of focus, which is slightly different since our last recording.
Okay, sounds good. Kara, do you want to talk about that?
Sure, thanks. As Marcy mentioned, we have had some changes to the program. So for our class starting in May of 2016, which will be the class graduating in 2018, they'll be our first class that will matriculate into programs of concentration. So at Lauder, we have 6 programs of concentration that correspond to 5 regions of the world plus our global program. And I should mention that historically, for the last 30 years or so, students were primarily identified by the language they were studying at Lauder, and now they'll be identified primarily by the program of concentration. So those programs of concentration are Africa, which is our newest track, our newest program, where students will spend time in Africa and focusing on the continent for the 2 years of their studies at Lauder. Our Europe program is our second program. The third would be East and Southeast Asia. The fourth would be the Middle East, North Africa, and South Asia. And then lastly, in terms of the regions, would be Latin America. So those are our 5 regional programs of concentration. And students, or applicants rather, who've applied to the program to matriculate may have applied to a particular regional program of concentration or our global program, which is very similar to the last 2 years in which students focus on themes across regions globally and will spend time in the 24 months of the program focusing on those certain themes. And in the 2 months that they do their summer immersion, all of those students do a 2-month summer immersion, they'll go to 4 continents. So it's obviously by title very global in nature. So that's really our biggest change.
That's a very significant change. It's a significant change in focus, really.
Right. So, and it's really driven by the fact that we want our students to be not just linguistic experts, but really experts on a region and not necessarily a specific country within that region. But they'll continue to have language studies as they have done for the past 30 years. But we really want them, again, to be regional experts in issues that impact not just Mexico or Peru, but all of Latin America, for example. So we're excited about this change to the curriculum.
One of the requirements for admissions, which we can discuss at a later point, is taking a language test. And either that language test is going to correspond with one of the regions and the language on which the students focus once they get here, or in the case of the global program, the students who are admitted into the global program have already achieved a superior in a language and do not study language once they're here.
Got it.
So language is still a component of the program, but as the world has expanded and changed, we wanted to be current with the times.
All right. Is there still an oral proficiency interview requirement?
Yes, there is.
Uh-huh. So somebody who wants to join the Lauder program, they're expected to be fluent in a second language, correct?
It depends on which program you're applying for. If you're applying for the global program, they need to have fluency, a superior language in any language, with international experience also. If they're applying for a regional program with a focus on a language within that region, they need to test at the advanced level in that language in order to be eligible.
Somebody,
on the language test, there are five different categories, and from the bottom, it goes novice, intermediate, and then advanced. So it's closer to the bottom than it is the top of the language scale.
Right, right. And if are you limited? Like I'm looking at the page now that describes the or lists the languages that are acceptable. If you are fluent, or you have proficiency, I should say, not fluency, in any of the language listed here. Let's say you're fluent in Korean, which isn't a language. You're taught at Lauder are Chinese and Japanese, and you're fluent in Korean or Vietnamese or Tagalog. Is that acceptable for admission?
It's acceptable for the global program and for one of the Africa programs. At this point, we would need a critical mass in any of those outlying languages in order to develop a program. And so far, that hasn't occurred, but it is a possibility for the future.
I see.
And that's because students will study that language for the 2 years of the program until they get to the superior level, which is a requirement for them to graduate. So if they apply to East Asia, generally speaking, students in that region are studying Chinese or Japanese, coming in at least at the advanced level, and then, again, graduating at the superior level. So part of their studies over the 2 years of the program will be the language that will help them get to that superior level.
What if somebody already has a superior level in English and some other language? Are they still required to learn a third language or no?
No.
Okay.
So we have had occasionally a student matriculate who already is at the superior level in, say, Mandarin or Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, the students will do their immersion, but they've already met the language requirement. So they'll have other studies.
There are a lot of different pieces on the menu for language ability and the program that the students apply. If you have superior speaking abilities in Spanish, Italian, or French, you can start Portuguese from zero knowledge. So
right.
In that case, you would be learning a new language and you would be focusing on Latin America and Brazil. One of the things that's changed with these regions of concentration during the first summer is that, for example, the students who are in the Latin American program would spend 5 weeks in a country that corresponds to the language of their focus, but they spend the other 3 weeks with the speakers of the secondary language in that region in other places. The students, for instance, who are focusing on Latin America and Spanish would spend time in Brazil with those who are focusing on Portuguese and vice versa. So, and then they're also that there's an expanded group during the summer. In Europe, they will go to Luxembourg, Belgium, and Amsterdam in addition to the regions that correspond with the German language or the French language or the Russian language or the Spanish language. In Asia, they will go to China, Japan, and Korea.
Mm-hmm.
In the Middle East, they will go to Dubai and India and Morocco during the summer immersion.
Wow.
So each of the students in any particular regional group will spend time with other students in that regional group, and they will have their lectures in English, but the debriefs will be in their language.
Are most of the students in the program, in terms of their native language, English speaking, or do many of them have English as a second language?
60% approximately are U.S. citizens or dual citizens, and 40% are international students. So many of them do not have English as their first language, but they obviously have to speak English in order to come to school here.
What are some of the other implications of this change in focus from programs structured around language to a program structured around regions?
Well, as Marcy says, I think to lots of our applicants, the program doesn't really look that different than it did a few years ago.
Okay.
Again, it's more of a slightly pedagogical in terms of its change so that students become, you know, experts regionally, as I mentioned. A few of the other changes, although perhaps slightly less significant, is that in the past, the students would take additional shorter immersions, maybe a week or so, and those were not for credit. They were experiential, but also they would visit companies, and they were sort of an abbreviated version of our 2-month summer immersion. And going forward, the class that starts in May of next year, those will be for credit. So those are called intercultural ventures. They'll be about 7 to 10 days, and they're in a variety of locations around the world, Thailand, Cuba, Israel. So that's an additional requirement the students haven't had in the past. In the past, they were optional. There's also an additional core course that they'll be taking on leadership. Mm-hmm. So those are a few of the additional changes. But in terms of how the program would really feel and for the students and how, the experience that they would have, it won't be dramatically different from the program that's in place now.
Now, one of the things I've always heard about the Lauder program is that it's intense. It's demanding. It seems like you've increased the requirements a little bit. Are you also reducing them in some other area, or am I misunderstanding something here?
We have not increased them. We've just changed what they're doing during the same amount of time and offering expanded opportunities. I tell people who are thinking about doing Lauder in addition to Wharton that you can't do everything at Wharton. It's like a buffet. You have to make choices.
Well, I think that's true of the regular program, too.
They have, hundreds of courses and hundreds of activities, so you can't do it all no matter who you are. Mm-hmm. And that they should think about Lauder as a couple of their extracurricular activities. It is 2 more courses per semester, and it is that first summer. But considering the fact that you get 2 degrees and a network of lifetime colleagues, friends, and associates, it's a good use of people's time, I think.
Right. Now, I visited Wharton with AGAC a couple of years ago and heard a presentation on the Lauder program given by Dr. Mauro Gann. And I saw the main points from his talk echoed very much in the video that's currently, the excellent video, I should say, on your site. And there are a few points in particular that both in his talk and in the video were emphasized. One is that Wharton Lauder is intense, and I just mentioned that, because you're doing an MBA and MA in 2 years, and you're doing the JD and MA in 3 years, depending upon which program you choose. He also emphasized again and again that this is a program for the highly motivated, intellectually curious student. And again, in the video, the term curiosity, curious, came up repeatedly. That is, you know, again, with Dr. Gann and Ronald Lauder. Is that true, and why do you think it's true?
Well, I think that the students who have come to us come here as a self-selecting population. They've been, generally speaking, doing things international for all of their lives. So they've done exchange programs. They've worked outside their home country. They've traveled. They are curious about other cultures and want to turn it into formal learning if they haven't done so in the past. So instead of feeling like an odd guy out when they get here, they feel as though they've found a home with a group of other people who have got the same sort of interests. Mm-hmm. And some of the travel is glamorous and good, and it's all involves learning, but some of it is hard and challenging. So that would make it appropriate for a person who is curious and willing to try new things and interested in perhaps even working outside of their home country when they graduate, or certainly doing business with another place.
Can you give and you touched on it, Kara, I think, at the beginning, and can either one of you or both of you discuss and give a few examples of the 8-week summer immersion that begins Lauderite journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So as we discussed a little bit earlier, the program starts in May of each year. So the students come to the Lauder Institute in the beginning of May. They'll do 1 month of classes here in Philadelphia. And then in June and July, they depart all over the world in their programs of concentration for their 8-week immersion. So they'll be to Latin America, Europe, Asia, Africa, and our global program, as well as the Middle East. So the locations vary, obviously, throughout the region, but the objective is that students, regardless of what program they're in, will likely go to at least 3 or 4 countries in that 8 weeks. As Marcy mentioned, in terms of the language, if they're studying Spanish, they'll be in a Spanish-speaking country for 5 of those 8 weeks, but they'll also spend time in Brazil, in Mexico, et cetera. The same would be true for students in our Europe program and the Asian program and all the other programs that we have. So students and applicants can expect to have the same 8 weeks in terms of the immersions. For what they do on these immersions, it's really a mix of company visits, language instruction, cultural excursions, meetings with political leaders, and then they also do some research and do some academic work as well. So it's, you know, very educational, very experiential. They'll be in language. I think it's challenging for the students. Obviously, they form a very tight-knit community during those 8 weeks in their language groups and then also in their programs of concentration. And the program, regardless of what part of the world the students go to, it will be a similar experience in terms of scope and shape for all the students in the program. And then after their 8-week immersion, they'll come back to Philadelphia and start the Wharton program if they're doing our dual degree with the MBA in August.
And to expand a little bit on the summer program, the corporate visits are not visits to line the students up for summer jobs the next year. They are visits to understand how business works in places other than the one that they're from. Mm-hmm. So they might go to a factory, for instance, and hear what the problems are of manufacturing in a particular region. Their cultural visits, I have been on a couple with them, and they range from going and seeing Kabuki in Japan to a variety of different dance presentations in Russia to see what kind of the dance makes up the culture of that particular region, generally in language, but it also shows something about the arts and the arts culture. Then they learn about the culture in terms of dealing with people from that particular region on a business front.
That's fascinating.
It's a full summer.
We also try to have alumni incorporated. So as you can imagine, we have Lauder alumni all over the world. We have, I think, about 1,600 or 1,700 now who've graduated from the program. So in the summer immersions, there's at least one opportunity, if not more, to have a reception with alums or meeting with alums. And quite often, the alumni will host the students at the companies that they're working at. So it's a nice way for the students to really become sort of indoctrinated into the wider Lauder community.
On one hand, you have the large Penn network, you have the Wharton network, but then you also have the kind of intense connections that one would create in this much smaller Lauder program, correct?
Correct. Yeah, that's very much true. I think the students would say that. They have this Lauder cohort of 70 or so students that they form very close bonds with. They call it Lauder Love. You may have seen it a little bit in the video.
Yeah.
And I think that's really true. And because of the unique experience they have in their summer immersion and because of their language experience, and also because, as Marcy said, they walk into a room of like-minded people who are from all over the world, who are curious about other parts of the world, who want to work internationally. I think they feel, as a part of a family when they become part of Lauder. But then, of course, they're also a member of this much larger Wharton community, 850 students or so, or the Penn Law community, of a couple hundred students in each one of their classes. And then certainly the larger Penn community. I mean, we have a very large university with thousands of students, and there's so many things to take advantage of. So I think they do have the best of both.
We have special events for the Lauder graduates around the world, particularly when we travel for admission, so that we are able to be in a position to introduce them to other Lauder graduates who are in the region that they might not have been meeting up until that point. And I'll tell you a story about a class reunion that I went to a couple of years ago. And of the 55 students in the class, there were 30 people who were there for the reunion.
Oh, wow.
Which in and of itself may not be that impressive, but it was the class of 1987.
No, that is
they
impressive.
They come from all over the world to celebrate many of their 50th birthdays. So that was good evidence of how closely they stay in touch and how much they care about each other.
Right. Now, you were talking about alumni. What do most Lauderites do after graduation? What kinds of jobs are they getting? I noticed that you have somebody in career services that's, you know, focuses very much on Lauder graduates. What do most of them go into, or is there a most?
I think it depends on which era we're talking about, because as the interest in a variety of economies has changed among the business students, so has it changed with Lauder. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have a group of people who are interested in social responsibility, and also a group of people who are interested in starting their own businesses. But our students really mirror what the Wharton students do in terms mm-hmm. of going into consulting, general business. Still a few in banking. Private equity has been quite popular over the last several years, and industry. And then there are people who have very successfully started their own businesses and some who have tried and then end up back in industry. But that's the story at Wharton as well.
Sure.
And many of them go and work in other countries or work in internationally focused businesses, even though they're domestically located. So they pursue their interest in all things international, even after graduation.
What are some of the coolest things recent Lauder grads are doing?
Well, one of our students who graduated 5 years ago, who was an entrepreneur, the first time I met him when he was 19 years old before he ever applied, started a company called babies.br.com, and he was in the Spanish group, but he was selling baby equipment online in Brazil.
Uh-huh.
And he started this business with his cousin, and by the end of the first year, he had 100 employees. By the end of the second year, he sold to his cousin and came back to the U.S. to start another business, which is called Cotopaxi, which is named after an Ecuadorian mountain. And they make gear for backpacks and things for the outdoors, and each backpack has a ribbon corresponding with a different country on the inside, and they give a portion of their profits to, for instance, an orphanage in Tanzania. So
wow.
They are doing good and having fun and doing well, too, with their business.
Any others come to mind? That's pretty cool.
There is an example of somebody. We have another woman who is with the UN Peacekeeping, and she is currently in Africa, but her last assignment was in Haiti, and before that she was in Israel.
Wow.
Pretty non-traditional business
yeah,
background.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very non-traditional.
One of our alumni who graduated in 1987, who was in the China group, lived all of her life in New York and worked for very international companies, but she recently accepted a position as CEO of Condé Nast and moved to Beijing, where she's
wow.
been for the past 2 years. So she's using her Chinese. She raised two children, and they're launched now. So she's off in the bad air of Beijing doing very interesting work.
Wow, that is pretty neat. Kara, do you have any favorites?
Well, I would say Marcy's definitely our institutional expert. Marcy's been here with the Institute for quite some time. I've been here just about 6 months, so I'm really learning what the new students are doing and what they're looking to do. I mean, as far as Marcy noted, you know, changes historically, overall, we're definitely seeing an increase in interest in entrepreneurship, I would say, not just here at Lauder, but obviously at Wharton.
Sure.
So maybe historically, finance and kind of the typical bread and butter business school subjects or disciplines were the most popular. But now entrepreneurship is very popular. Social impact, a lot of our students would like to work in another part of the world in a developing country and do some social impact in that region. So I think we've definitely seen a shift, and that's true, you know, business schools across the country and across the world, but very much so, I think, here at Wharton and Lauder.
Another one of our graduates who left Lauder about 5 years ago and worked in banking in New York, and he just joined TechnoServe, which is a supporting artists all around the world company, which so he's doing great things and sort of serves the nonprofit part of him. But, you know, they've got debt that they have to deal with before they
before they can
go off and do what they love. So,
right. Now, let's turn to the application, okay? How do admissions requirements for Wharton Lauder differ from those for Wharton, the MBA, or how do they differ from the requirements for Penn Law?
It's a joint application for Wharton and Lauder. So in addition to filling out the regular Wharton application, Lauder applicants need to answer a variety of questions on their international experience and their language background.
Right.
They have to interview tests online where it's a half an hour conversation, and they have to write an additional essay. For the Penn Law School students, they apply after 1L. So they come during the summer between their first year of law school and the second year of law school. And that's really a smaller population of people. We've never had more than five per class.
Oh, really? That's much
smaller. Yeah. They have the same requirements that the Wharton Lauder. So if you apply to the business school and Lauder, your application is read the same way it is for Wharton, and the expectation is that you can do the work at Wharton. So they look at GMATs and grades and essays and past work and recommendations. And then we also look at what your international experience is and how good your language is, why you want to come to the program, and why you think you'll be a good addition.
And how is the application process? So let's say I'm applying to the Wharton Lauder program, the MA-MBA. Is it going to first go to Wharton and then get approved and go to Lauder? Is it going to go to Lauder first and then go to Wharton? Are you both jointly looking it over and jointly making the decision?
Every application is read by two people. The first person who reads the application is a paid, trained reader. In the instance of Lauder, it's a second-year student. And the second person who reads it is staff. So when somebody applies to Wharton Lauder, we do both of the first reads and then agree with the people at Wharton about who we want to interview. And then there are two sets of interviews. One is the team-based discussion, which is what Wharton conducts now. And that's either on campus or in about seven places around the world. And if you're a Lauder applicant, you either have an interview with a Lauder student, second-year student, or an alum off campus. And then we meet together. We meet with Lauder staff and make decisions about who to admit, and then we meet with Wharton to see if they agree. So it's the jointness of it is in checking constantly throughout the process about individuals.
What is the Lauder interview like? I mean, there's a lot of information about the TBD, the team-based discussion, but what is the Lauder part of the interview like?
I would say the Lauder interview is more of a traditional interview, although not highly formal. I would say the vast majority of our applicants are interviewed here on campus by current students, and then occasionally Marcy and I interview applicants as needed. We'll look for, you know, why an applicant is applying to Lauder, what they feel Lauder can bring to their academic experience, their professional experience, how they feel they can make a contribution to the Lauder program. So we're looking for evidence of international experience, international ambitions, so that sort of thing. It's basically what we're looking to find out. We also like to find out why Lauder and not just Wharton. That's an important question for us. And how much someone has done their research about Lauder. I think some people are interested in the program because they say, oh, you know, 2 years of international study and I get to travel a lot. And certainly it's a great experience. It can be a lot of fun, but it's an academic program. There's a 60-page master's thesis that's required in order to graduate. So it is a rigorous program, and we want people to be interested in the program for the right reason. So that's definitely something we try to deduce in the interview, and occasionally for students that are applicants that are international that will be traveling to Philadelphia for the team-based discussion or the Lauder interview, Marcy will reach out to alumni around the world and ask them to interview Lauder applicants. And that will be very similar in terms of the questions and what the alumni are looking for.
And are most of the interviews blind?
Yes.
Okay. Now, by the time this show airs, the January deadline will have passed. What advice do you have for applicants planning ahead for a 2017 application?
They should come visit the school if at all possible and sit in on a Lauder class. They are welcome to come meet with Kara or myself and meet with current students on campus. If they are living internationally, we will be traveling with Wharton to be decided sites largely during the summer in order to do information sessions. I would always recommend that they try and attend those. Hopefully there will be Lauder alumni who are there at that point. They're welcome to reach out and touch base with us at any point.
Okay, great. Now, when you're evaluating applications, what gets you excited in a positive way about an applicant to Lauder?
The people who say that they were so excited to find the program, they felt as though it was designed for them. It shows that they really get it. I'm not recommending that everybody who listens to your podcast say that, but you know,
that excitement. They don't just say it.
That's right. No, but you know, for somebody who's had what appears to be an odd series of experiences through their life, or a great travel lust, or you know, worked outside the country, spoken languages, can't wait to learn another language, etc. That they want to maintain their focus on the language that they've been speaking up until now, and they're very interested in things beyond business. Mm-hmm. So that the arts and science perspective is important to them in terms of their ability to conduct business in other places. The program was started by the Lauder family because when they were hiring, at that point, Americans to send them outside the United States to work, they realized that the Americans were culturally unaware and linguistically challenged. So they gave a great deal of money to the University of Pennsylvania to start this program with the hope that at that point, Americans would become better at all things international. And even with the first year, we admitted, you know, many people who were international because they only add to the richness of the conversation in classes. So if your classmates have had experiences around the world, imagine what an interesting conversation that is in almost every class.
Right, for sure. For sure. I once had somebody over for dinner, and I don't remember how the topic came up, but she said, okay, what do you call somebody who's trilingual? Somebody who speaks three languages, trilingual. What's somebody who speaks two languages, bilingual? What's somebody who speaks one language? And the response was American.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you've heard that one.
Yeah.
I myself grew up in a home where my father knew 8 languages and my mother knew only 4. And, you know, I was well into adulthood before I realized that knowing 4 languages is really pretty impressive.
Well, but you should come to the Lauder Institute.
Well, those are my parents. I know 2. So, because I am an American.
Okay.
I am an American.
Well, so, some people have it and some people don't. I studied the languages for 11 years in school and college, and I couldn't possibly even register on the OPI to a test, I don't think, at this point. So, of course, Latin was one of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a hard one. But no, yeah. My father was extraordinarily gifted with languages, and in the year before he passed away, when he was already 85, he was still reading fluently, like, books in 4 different languages. I don't, you know, spoken ability might have declined by then, but he was just, like I said, that was also partially because of where he grew up. He grew up in an area of the world where, you know, you had to know multiple languages, and then his life experience forced him to learn and use multiple languages. But
yeah, well, it's a great, wonderful, rich community of people. We've even had 2 sons of Lauder graduates.
Oh, really? That's exciting.
One in the program and one already graduated. So it's fun to see the next generation coming along of people whose parents taught them the same things that they had enjoyed growing up.
And they're citizens of the world on some level.
Oh, definitely. One thing, Linda, I just wanted to mention, for any applicants who are curious about the language admission part of the application,
Sure. They
can go onto our website and they can listen to clips so they have an idea of what level they should be at in order to apply and for the advanced low, for example, so they can listen to that. And if they have no trouble understanding it, then they're probably in good shape. So sometimes people kind of are curious, oh gosh, what level do I have to be at? So I encourage, you know, anyone who's interested.
We'll link to that.
Quite a few languages on our website.
Right. I found the clips. I don't speak the languages that are on your site, so it's not going to do me any good.
Not
going to help me at all. But I will definitely link to that page at excel.com/135 so that any listener can either go to, you know, can find it very easily. Now, what advice, really final words of wisdom, do you have for MBA applicants interested in Wharton Lauder?
I think thinking about what it is that you want to go to business school for. Most people who go to Wharton are doing it to change careers.
Right.
But we like to see that they have a pretty specific idea of what it is that they want to do with their education. It's a lot of time and money not to know. And there's so many choices once you get here that if you don't know, you're going to get confused. And the same thing is true for Lauder, to know why it is that you want to do it and what you want to accomplish from this additional education.
I'm sitting here with a big smile on my face because I couldn't agree with you more. Kara, do you have any last words of wisdom?
Yeah, I would say, you know, to the extent that you can, as an applicant, you know, do your research. If you're able to come to Philadelphia and sit in a class, as Marcy said, that's great. For some of our students, because of where they're, you know, they're based geographically, maybe that's not an option. Mm-hmm. But they can definitely reach out to the office. We can put them in touch with a student, with an alum. Our students are hosting coffee chats around the world. The Wharton students also do that in the summertime. So definitely do your research. In terms of the application, I always tell people really simple things like just have somebody proof your essays, make sure that your reasons for applying to our school make sense, that you've done your research, you understand how our program works. I think that's a really important thing that can't be overlooked. And Marcy and I are happy to do anything to facilitate somebody's interest in the program and answer any questions that they have.
Sounds great. Marcy and Kara, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about Wharton Institute's the Wharton Lauder Institute's joint MA-MBA and MA-JD. I do realize it's much smaller.
Yeah, so you can go onto our website. Our website is lauder.wharton.upenn.edu.
Okay, and we'll include a link in the show notes at excel.com/135 to lauder.wharton.upenn.edu, and we'll also include a link to the language testing page that we were discussing just a minute ago.
Thank you so much, Linda. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Listener, thank you, too, for joining Dr. Marcy Bevan and Kara Keenan-Sweeney and me for our 135th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a suggestion for you. Subscribe. Subscribe to Admission Straight Talk on iTunes or whatever podcast program you enjoy. I recently started using Overcast. You can subscribe there, wherever you want. And that way, you'll make sure you won't miss any future shows, and you'll also be able to go back very easily, listen to any past interviews with graduate and professional leaders and admissions directors like Amanda Carlson of Columbia, or just prominent people like Andy Yang of Venture for America or John Medved of Our Crowd. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at excel.com/135 or by sending an email to questions@excel.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.